little note. I will share with you one thing. When we went up to Indiana, they were very kind to us there and very thankful for that. But the one thing I had more than one person come up to me and comment about was how big my Bible was. And I said, don't you know the guy with the biggest Bible wins at Bible study? Because for one, he has a greater chance of finding what he needs to find. And two, if a fight breaks out, I mean, the guy with the tome wins, so... Plus, I told him it was half empty, and I had to explain that. And if you don't know what that means, see me after services. I'll show you what I mean. It's a little over half empty now. So, when it was given to me, it was half empty. Deuteronomy chapter 16, where I want to have our study this evening. Deuteronomy chapters 16 and 17. And I have to share with you, I made a concerted effort to not put so much on my PowerPoint so that we could possibly maybe make it to the end of a lesson. I recently had to relearn that lesson from a dear friend of mine and a teacher of the Bible who, while he didn't say it, I realized in listening to one of his podcasts that he wasn't saying everything he knew or everything that he thought would be interesting. He had to cut it off somewhere, and I thought, well, that's a good thing to do. So you're going to get a little bit from me in that line, but we're going to try to get through at least some of the material. But as we typically start, if this thing will load for me, what do we find first? I'm not going to give you much leeway. We're sort of in the middle of a section, Deuteronomy 12 through, let's say, 26-ish. We have this review of the law of Moses. It's given in sermon form, so this isn't the, like, reading the legal code. Sorry, only one of us in here actually likes doing that. yeah, Robert's looking around like, not me. This is presented in sermon format. Okay, so it's a little bit of the same repetition, but you're going to notice some repeated phrases, specifically in today's section, that maybe you wouldn't have seen in the actual kind of statutes as they were written earlier. So Deuteronomy chapter 16, what do you see when you go there? Well, if this thing will cooperate. There we go. Okay, well, maybe. There we are. First eight verses. I think we got it. What do you see? First eight verses, chapter 16.
Say, minor holly should observe the Passover.
Okay. Why? Exactly right. So, kind of one word. See, here's my proof that I really was trying to be short-winded. Passover, right? Feast, O Passover. The two or three people I read commenting on this passage noted that, especially in the sections of Passover and the two feasts that follow, not a lot of new info here. Okay, not a lot of unique things written, except for this one phrase that keeps getting repeated in chapter 16 and a couple of times in chapter 17. Okay, so the first eight verses we have the observation of Passover. What month to keep it? A very, very abbreviated version of what this is going to look like. Okay, they don't go into all of the specific details that you find in Exodus or when they are repeated again in the book of Leviticus. Condensed version, sermon version of the Passover feast. You have the reason why they're doing it, the idea that they're going to be remembering the day they came out of the land of Egypt. You have the mention at the end of the unleavened bread, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Okay, there is you have Passover, and then you immediately have this seven-day Feast of Unleavened Bread. All right, 9 through 12, what's there? Yes, sir. Do you know? No? Okay. He's honest about it. 9 through 12, what do you see? Feast of Weeks, okay? Now, someone that's not him, and I do this at school, by the way. I get other people to answer. Someone that's not him, what other name do we have for the Feast of Weeks? The one we really know. Acts chapter 2. What's the feast in Acts chapter 2? Pentecost. All right. Pentecost comes from a Greek phrase which means 50, right? 50 days following. You see that here in this text, right? You shall count 7 weeks. It actually wound up being on the next day, which is why 49 plus 1 makes 50, Greek phrase for 50 is very close to the word Pentecost. Okay, so Feast of Weeks is the feast that's there. It's a rejoicing sort of feast. It's a free will offering. Everyone's going to partake of it. What do you see 13 through 15? Feast of Booths or Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, either way. Watched a fascinating video here recently of a man who went into a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood in New York City during Sukkot, or the Feast of Booths. And on their balconies, on the outsides of the buildings, they have built little booths on like the fire escapes and the balconies. And they literally spend basically their non-working hours in those booths. Very, very fascinating, just culture-wise. But they did that. They still had some version of that going on even today. All right. I made a mistake in the lesson. There should have been a summary section, and I think I overlooked it, so apologize for that. Verses 16 through 17. What's there? Okay, so during those three things, they're not going to appear empty-handed. They always have something to bring, and that's true for all the feasts. Everyone giving as he's able. Okay, what else? Sort of a summary, right? Sort of just a wrap-up. What do the three feasts have in common that are mentioned here? Other than, as Mr. Bill said, bringing things before the Lord. They were all feasts that where you had to
go to the place where God determined.
You had to go to the place where God chose. Okay, that's what sets these three feasts apart from the others that they would celebrate. Okay, Sabbath is actually considered a feast. It's a rather often feast, but it is a feast. These are called, I think I called them the pilgrimage feasts. Okay, they were the three times a year every male in Israel had to go and appear. At where would they go? Three times a year, they all had to go where?
Well, they mentioned that they had to go to the temple, but here they had to go a little bit farther
to the river. To wherever the tabernacle is. Right? When they would arrive, this is all prescriptive, right? This is all talking about what's going to happen when you get to the land of Canaan. There's no need at this point to do pilgrimages, they're still in the wilderness. When they get into the land, settle it, and they're spread out, three times a year, they're all going to appear wherever the tabernacle is. That would eventually be Jerusalem, which would then turn and be the temple, and so on. Okay, so wherever the tabernacle would be, that's the place that they would choose. Okay, pressing right along here. 18 through 20, big shift in topic. And it carries almost all the way through chapter 17. But what do you see in 18 through 20 of chapter 16? Yes, Bill's doing that.
The requirement that they appoint judges and the character of that person.
Okay. Definitely, they're going to appoint judges and officers in their towns. Notice it says there, in, I think it's verse 18, according to your tribes. This is a tribal judiciary system. Okay, if you think about even the concept of the judiciary system in our nation, it begins very locally and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, or rather smaller as you move up the chain, right? You have local judges and then you have all of the districts and sections and however leading up to one. This was the system Israel had. It started at the local level, it started within their tribes. Okay, they would appoint men who would judge. How were they supposed to judge? Sir?
Honorably.
Righteously. Judge with justice, right? I love the way it's worded. I think it's verse 20. Justice, the ESV says, justice and only justice you shall follow, right? It's like there's no other option. We'll get into exactly what that looks like here in a bit, but that's the beginning of it, the standards for judgment, all right? Terrible chapter break here. Most chapter breaks are terrible. You know my feelings on those. 16:21 through 7 and verse 1. What do you see? It appears random. I promise you it's not. What's there? Yeah. Right in the middle of... Whoa. Don't do that. Oops, I broke it. Right in the middle of appoint judges, 16, 18 through 20, and then 17, 2 through 7, sort of a scenario, you might say, of this going about, you have leave the idols alone. We've heard often, leave the idols alone. It seems like it's the every third word in Deuteronomy is leave the idols alone. There's a reason why leave the idols alone is right here. Okay. What happens in the next section? This is our link. What happens in the next section? Mm-hmm. So specifically the crime in question in the next section is someone's found worshiping idols, right? So see how it all kind of fits together. You have 16 verse 18. You're going to establish judges at the tribal level. They're going to judge. They're going to judge with righteous judgment. They're going to judge fairly. They're not going to be impartial. Then at the end of the chapter, beginning of the next, you have some examples of some crimes that would require judgment. Okay, not everything went to trial then, just the same as it is now, right? I am breaking everything tech-wise. Involved. There. Stand back here. You have some crimes at the end of 16, beginning of 17, that would require judgment. And according to the next section, what would be the punishment? Death. Stoning. Okay. Now, we knew already that idolatry was punishable by death, and specifically by stoning. We knew that already. We had some indication already that there was a judiciary system, but this is a little more specific. Okay, we have how they're going to be appointed, how they're going to be judging, the investigative process. You can see that here. It says there, it is told you and you hear of it, then you shall inquire diligently, and if it is true and certain that such an abomination has been done in Israel. Right, we have a phrase, beyond the shadow of a doubt, right? Or beyond all reasonable doubt, however you want to word it. They had the same idea. Okay, one could say we might have gotten it from them. Once this happens, they're going to go stone this person with stones. On what about the witnesses?
Two or three.
Two or three. Could there be four?
Sure.
Yeah. This isn't an exclusive. This is the idea of here's what you're looking for. Two or more, right? If they found three witnesses, they didn't throw. If they found four witnesses, they didn't throw the case out because it only says two or three. They understood what this meant, okay? More than one. One person could rise as a false witness and maybe keep their story together long enough to get a person punished unfairly. The likelihood of two people doing it, far less, three even less, and so on. Okay, this is trying to alleviate false witnesses. Jesus ran into this during his own trials, did he not? False witness after false witness kept rising up, but they could never find two that agreed until finally they did. Shows you the character of their court there in Jesus' time. They just kept taking witnesses until two of them lined up and said, okay, we got our two witnesses. That, you know, that doesn't work, but that was part of the story. And again, you see a familiar phrase in chapter 17, verse 7, you shall purge the evil from your midst. Okay, back when we were talking specifically about idol worship, you know, if it's your friend, if it's a town, if it's a prophet, that was the same phrase that kept getting repeated. Purge the evil from your midst. Okay? That was 18. That was 8 through 13. I'm sorry. Let's back up a bit. That was 2 through 7. What about 8 through 13? Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, someone who fails to listen to whatever was decided, right? Now let's back up just a hair from that, because you're exactly right, but it's kind of part of a bigger story. What's just in front of what he just described? If what?
There arises a situation that really you don't want to do.
Yeah.
You're told what you think about it.
That sounds familiar. A court can't decide something, so what do they do? They pass it on the chain, go right on up with it, right? Until eventually here in the U.S. you reach to the Supreme Court and then a decision's made or so on. This is the same idea. This is the Jewish version of the Supreme Court. It would go up the chain. It would go up to the, you know, beyond the local level. And it would go up to where? Where was this located? This highest court. There's a familiar phrase there in, say, around verses 9 or 10. Yeah. Priests should be an indication, right? Priests were located where? Yeah, wherever the tabernacle was. That's where you found the priests. Okay. Levites were everywhere. But priests, wherever the tabernacle is, okay, that's where they would go. Priests would not, well, the council or the court in this case would be made up of not only priests. Okay, typically there was a layperson and then a representative from the priesthood, and possibly even more than that. It's usually thought that it's not the high priest in this case. I could be convinced otherwise, but most people I read said it probably wasn't the high priest. Although there was something really important the high priest could do. Okay, what could the high priest do that would help in these difficult decisions? They had a specific thing they could do. Exactly. The high priest has the ability to go before the Lord and ask a specific question and have an answer rendered, you know, the Urim Thummim thing he had in his breastplate. Okay, so that was part of the court being in that location would be helpful for that, to be able to inquire of God. And the point Alan made a little bit ago, when the decision's made, did you notice how many times they kept saying, do the thing they decided, right? He says, it's almost comical. He says, then you shall do according to what they declare to you from that place that the Lord will choose, the familiar phrase, and you shall be careful to do according to all that they direct you, according to the instructions that they give you, and according to the decision that which they pronounce to you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside from the verdict that they declare to you, either to the right hand or to the left. It's like over and over and over. Just do the thing they decide. And if not, you die. You die just like an idolater dies, and for the same reason. Notice the phrase is the same. Purge the evil from Israel. Okay. And another phrase connected with capital punishment, all the people shall hear and fear. Right? Same idea. Okay, one more, 14 through 20. What do you see? The law concerning kingship, kinghood, the royal law, okay? This was the law for Israelites' kings. It roughly breaks down into some prohibitions and one big command. Okay, the prohibitions are pretty simple. A king had to be from where? Or of what descent? Israelite. That's it. Okay. Kings did not necessarily have to come from the line of Judah. In fact, the first king didn't. He came from the line of Benjamin. Saul of Kish was a Benjamite, right? It didn't pass to David, and the line stayed in David's family throughout all the way till the time of Christ. So that's the first big requirement. You can't have a foreigner as a king. There are three prohibitions given here. They cannot have many what? Wives, that was loud. 10-4, I agree. Wives.
I don't know if they're related or not. You can have a lot of horses.
Wives, they are most certainly not related. This is being recorded, you remember. They're not to accumulate wives, they're not to accumulate horses, and they're not to accumulate wealth or money, right? Silver, right, financial power. Do we know of anybody that accumulated all of those things? Solomon. Not good. Okay. Not good for Solomon. To strike against Solomon. Those are your prohibitions. What's the one big thing the king was supposed to do? What do you think, Ty? You're supposed to honor and worship God. Okay. Part of that was involved with what? What would he do?
He's supposed to keep his own personal copy of the law.
So he ran down to the Israelite Xerox store and, you know, ran him off a few copies.
He says, write it himself.
Hand, written by hand. This is interesting. So a king had to be literate. Did you catch that on the way through? He not only had to be able to read, he had to be able to write. Okay. The Bible doesn't spend a whole lot of time on education other than of the spiritual variety, right? You shall teach your children about being an Israelite, honoring God, and so on. We don't read much about make sure they can read and write, but this was a requirement for a king. He had to be able to do that. Okay, I don't know that every Israelite kid could do that, but at least the one who's king might have had that privilege, okay, to be able to learn. They were most certainly an educated people. Okay, can't read and write, you know, without education. So that's a bit of just a link to that. He was to copy his own copy of the law. It shall be with him, he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes and doing them. The one big thing the king had to do was the one big thing all the rest of Israel is called to do. Keep the law. You might say that's the one big, you know, what do you do if you're king? Keep the law. The king is not above, I love this phrase, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers. The king might have been the leader, he might have been important, and certainly so, but he wasn't above everybody. He was still subject to God. Okay. See? Yes, sir. Yep. No. Absolutely. They have gone way far afield by the time Herod and the other Herods that were around. The king had to be an Israelite. I'll save it for later, but there was something about that I wanted to think about with you if we have time. It's kind of an extra thing, but I'll save that and see if it gets there. What did you see as you went through the text, other than just what it says? Right? What did you notice? Any repetitions that you wanted to bring out? Or anything that struck you as you read through it?
It wasn't out of the room of the infamous. You shall celebrate.
Yeah.
They have peace and they get to celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah, their coming before the Lord was a happy event. It was a 3 times a year celebration. I grew up having family reunions, and I just liked it because there was more kids to play with other than my sister. I mean, that was really it when you're a kid. It's just, hey, look, other kids. But this was a celebratory thing, you know, to get together and worship before God. He would bless them to be able to do that. You know, what other nation on earth did all the citizens show up at their one city 3 times a year? And not get overrun by their enemies or go to poverty because they're taking all this time off. You know, the Greeks even thought the Jews odd because they didn't work on Saturday. They thought they were lazy. You know, no other nation on earth could survive unless, you know, survive doing that because God gave them what they needed. All right, Ty, what'd you see? Remember, you got to speak up. God gave him. Yep. They had to follow God's law. They had to trust in him, or they would suffer for that. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. What else did you notice as you read through? You're fine. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Over and over, God says, you got a choice. You want to stay here, you want to keep it, you want to be happy and, you know, fed and joyous and all this, you got to stay here. You know, you can't deviate from the path. All right, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, it's, and I love that you mentioned that as folks, they say, well, it doesn't apply to us. And I think sometimes, and don't correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sometimes that expression, well, it doesn't apply to us, is shorthand for we don't want to go look at it. Because it's hard, and because we've got to do the work of actually sifting through and filtering. And then you find a passage like that. In that same section, look at verse 18. Judge the people with righteous judgment. Does that sound familiar? Jesus said nearly exactly the same thing. I'm going to get to that verse here in a little bit. Judge with righteous judgment over in John's Gospel. That's New Testament. You know, so much of what the New Testament... I mean, I tell people all the time, 3/4 of your Bible's in the Old Testament. You really need to do your time there. Get that section. I mean, nobody would dare pick up a J.K. Rowling book and start 3/4 through the book and hope to have a sense of what's going on. Whether one should start one is up to for debate, but we'll have that fight later. Judge with righteous judgment. It also describes what that actually looks like. You don't show partiality. That's James chapter 2, right? The one who shows partiality. You don't accept a bribe. Why? Because bribes do then what bribes do now. Blind the eyes of the wise and subvert the cause of the righteous. Same song and dance today, right? This is called politics in some circles. Yes, sir. Yep. Egypt is, there is a hard line drawn. You're not going back there. There's a reason why later when God condemns them, when they're condemned at, what is it, when the spies return, they actually turn to go back the way of Egypt. Right? Now, they're not going all the way back, but it's that direction. Right? Later on, they're threatened with being sold back into Egypt. You don't go back there. Right? That is a place you do not return from, and you see that referenced here also. Yes, sir.
Well, in this part about the judges, not only is the letter of the law that's there, but underlying that is what we pointed out before. God takes care of everybody.
Yes, he
does. That little man stands on equal footing with the big wealthy guy because it's impartial. Bribes are not supposed to influence you. They're supposed to be on equal footing. Then in the next part where they have something that's too hard to judge by, not only do you have somebody else that can make that decision, but there's a very important rule that's there to undermine all of the judgment. That ruling by that last group, they're the final arbiter. It says, for many reasons, several different ways, do what they say, do what they say, do what they say, don't be it. There's got to be a final arbiter somewhere.
Yep.
And, well, that's what they said, but let's don't do that. No, you better do it.
Yeah. Todd spoke last time of the kind of the idea of the law being, this is the law, you must do it. It is what it is, and you have to keep it. Same thing with this final decision is whatever they decide, that's it. There's no, well, I don't care. I don't think it's right. It wasn't, you know, you keep it, right? If you want to understand, this is the way justice is supposed to be done, the way it's described here, right? This idea of without partiality. everyone's the same, rich or poor, small or great. If there is a decision they recognize that's too hard for a judge to make, I love the fact that God recognizes there are just some situations you're going to run into with one of these tribal judges that they can't sort it out. They don't know. There's a plan for that. There's some way to take care of it. It's just really astounding. You might think how advanced this system is given when it was given. You know, when God said, you know, the foreigners are going to notice the things that you do, and they're going to wonder at it, and they're going to be impressed by it. I have to think this is part of it, the way their judicial system worked. Very, very, very unique. Okay, go ahead.
As far as repetition, so in chapter 16, unless I'm counting wrong, I think 19 times the phrase, the Lord your God, is used.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it was something they were not to say. It was treated in a very different way than anything else. And the scribes would write that word. You know, they had a whole washing that they had to go through. They treated it in a very special way. And it seems to me that the phrase, I didn't read any commentaries about this, but it seems this phrase, you know, knowing the name of God was special, and I would say personal, right? When you know somebody's name, mm-hmm. they're not a stranger. Mm-hmm. It carries with the idea you have a relationship with this person because you know their name. But it's who he is. You know, it's the personal, but he's your God. And it's, so I think that phrase is packed with a lot of meaning for that reason, emphasizing this is the basis of all that they're being instructed to do. It's this list of things they're to do, which we have to observe, they departed from about all these things.
Yes, they did.
You don't have to go that far into the minor prophets and the prophets to see that, you know, justice they set aside, judges were, you know, stealing from widows, and, you know, all these things that they left it. I have to think it has to do with the fact that they left out this phrase that's 19 times said, the Lord your God is the reason why you do these things. And they lost sight of that.
Yeah. Probably they became familiar, and, you know, it just became old hat. And you think, how could that be possible? But it did. Okay, just some things. I mentioned the phrase, the Lord will choose the place, or some version of that, the place your Lord will choose. What is it? 8, 9 times, just something in our section. Not only that, but the Lord is the one who chooses the king. The Lord is the one who chooses how they worship him. The Lord chooses a lot. He chooses everything. They are still allowed to make decisions in some circumstances, but all the big stuff, God decides. You know, specifically where they're going to gather and how they're going to gather. It impressed me reading through, something I've seen before, but he says in 16 and verse 16, 3 times a year all your males shall appear before the Lord your God. Now we know the women went along. Okay, Mary went with Joseph. Hannah went with her father, went with her husband Elkanah. The women went, the families went with them. But the men were expected to lead this. They were expected to be leaders in this spiritual endeavor. Just something that caught my eye as I went through. And just this idea that their life was supposed to revolve around God. And in a very real sense, wherever God decided to dwell, wherever the tabernacle or wherever the temple was, that was the center of their life. If that were ever taken away from them, that would be, you know, that's the... Actually, I'm going to talk about that on Sunday, but that's the worst. right, if that goes somewhere. All right, some things the Israelites might have learned from it, again, time-wise. First of all, I would hope that an Israelite coming through this would figure out God's authority is absolute. He is, you know, supreme high ruler, emperor, czar, whatever you want, word you want to put on it. He is number one, right? God would say of himself, I am the Lord and there is no other. There's no competition. There's no counsel. There's no checks and balances. There's none of that with God. There is what God says. And they're to be subject to it. Even down to wherever the tabernacle is parked and how they came to worship him and what they did while they were there and who gets to be king. God makes those decisions. He is the ruler of Israel. Even though he allows for a king to be appointed, he's still the ruler. If the king's first action as king is to write down God's law and then keep it, he's underneath, right, immediately God's authority. They would have seen God, I hope, as the source of all of their blessings. All of the feasts that come around, it was mentioned that God would bless them and he would continue to bless them if they would engage in those things. You know, hopefully they would have seen that. And lastly, if Israel wasn't a perfect place, there was a reason why they were given a system of, you know, judiciary system. They would need it. There would be crimes committed. There would be fraud. There would be all these things that need to be taken care of. If they wanted justice, they had to go get it God's way. They couldn't resort to doing things like the nations around them and expect to get justice out of it. Like so much else of what they did, they started doing what the nations around them did, and justice was perverted. And like every other culture on earth, the rich became more powerful and they oppressed the poor, and it went on from there. Same story continues even today. Okay. Very quickly. Well, not very quickly. I almost did it. I almost made it to that one. All right. We almost did, I should have said. Let's continue chapter 18. Next time we gather together, Lord willing, on the 20th. You'll notice, even though it's still two chapters, it's a very short two chapters. So hopefully we'll be able to make it a little further along. But you'll notice 18 and 19 is a bit of a welcome break. There's just not as much there, but we'll look forward to that. All right. Thank you guys for your comments. I really appreciate it. It makes for a good study.